Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Hey, this is great as we get here into the holiday season. You know, it's a great opportunity to kind of kick back and talk about some more in-depth topics, have some great guests on the show, but also, hey, take your phone calls as well if you want to jump in on the conversation. 406-294-0970. One of the folks that I've been wanting to catch up with again for some time now is Tom Opry. Great guy. He's a Flathead Valley wildlife filmmaker and conservationist and outdoorsman. You guys probably know the name Tom Opry because he has been traveling all across the state of Montana doing screenings for his new documentary, The Real Yellowstone. Tom, great to have you here in studio, and thanks for being back with us.
You know, Aaron, it's great to be here and great to be talking to the great people of the state of Montana.
You, I also wanted to talk with you. I saw recently you were doing a trip to Uzbekistan, and all I could think of was that Toby Keith song about the Taliban, you know, or maybe Turkmenistan. You know?
Well, actually, what, Uzbekistan is how
Uzbekistan.
Well, during when we were in Afghanistan, our military used Uzbekistan to transfer over there quite a bit.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, no, actually, you know, we're really concerned about the future of wildlife, like you said, but at the same time, we've come to realize it's about people, right? Wildlife doesn't live on the tops of our mountains because we're covered with snow and ice, especially today, and it doesn't live in our cities, except maybe in Helena, you might have a few deer running around, but at the end of the day, it lives on fertile ground with people, and it's those people that have to be tasked with taking care of doing the good work in conservation. And conservation, the wise use of natural resources, is extremely important to making sure that we have healthy forests and vibrant wildlife populations. Hey, folks, it's about clean drinking water. Really, that's what it comes down to. And so all of our sportsmen and women around Montana, around the country, around the world are participating in that fact. And so, you know, we end up looking at the international trade of flora and fauna. So there's an international treaty called CITES, and every 3 years they have a conference of parties. So this is their 20th one. They had one 3 years ago in Panama City that we were able to go to. And the Shepherds of Wildlife Society, our nonprofit, 501c3, is designated by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service as an observer NGO. So we have actually a seat at the table, and I even have a microphone if I want to talk. But there's a lot of wrangling going on over the international trade of flora and fauna, which impacts even people here in Montana, you know, because it can be about certain species that are maybe potentially threatened or protected. And so there'll be a day, one of these days, when we're actually managing things like grizzly bears through, you know, through sustainable use. And when we do that, those bears will probably be, you know, utilizing CITES as a way to be able to do the international trade. So if people want to come from Europe or Mexico or some other place and be a part of that conservation success story, then they're going to have to go through the various procedures that that particular treaty entails. And so there's 185 countries that abide and are signatories to it. And unfortunately, what we witnessed there, and we saw that some years ago, is that the anti-use, anti-hunting NGOs have almost taken over.
And, well, that's what I was going to bring up, is because I saw while you were in Uzbekistan, there was something that really set you off. Because normally this is a pro-conservation, which also means pro-hunting type of crowd, but the anti-hunting element is on the march worldwide. We're going to talk about that and more with Tom Opry. And by the way, the book, The Real Yellowstone, is out. I've got it in front of me right now. Stand by.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
You know, I had the honor of, actually a few years ago, I've been at this SHOT Show in Las Vegas now several years in a row. We're going to be back there coming up in January. John Jackson will be sidekicking with me for several days from the SHOT Show in Vegas. In fact, we got to see Tom Opry at the SHOT Show in Las Vegas. And then I think I saw you again at SCI, Safari Club International, because their convention was in Vegas that year as well. And I remember, Tom, when I got to sit at a table, I think I was tagging along with, I don't think he was congressman at that time, former Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, but we ended up sitting at this table with some basically leading conservationists from like the Horn of Africa, you know, in places like Tanzania, where these incredible, you know, the Serengeti is and everything. And it was a great conversation. The reason why these people that run the Yellowstone National Parks of Tanzania and Kenya, for example, go to things like Safari Club International is because they fully get it, how hunting is actually the greatest conservation tool out there. If we want to save these animals, hunting is really the best way to do it. And so you've made that case so well over the years. But talk about being in Uzbekistan and how you still have the anti-hunting element on the march worldwide.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. You got to remember, you know, we kind of think that hunting is a right. Well, it's not. It's not in the Bill of Rights. It's not in the U.S. Constitution. I'm sure our founding fathers...
Montana Constitution's got it. But
federal law trumps state law, right? Okay, let's get the realities here, folks. It's nice. It's window dressing. But at the end of the day, only 4% of people in the United States buy a hunting license. That's U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service data. So, again, hunting is a privilege. And that's why it's so important, especially here in Montana. We've got to do a better job of being that, not only stewards, but also that image that we portray amongst ourselves, especially because there's lots of stupid things going on here in Montana, which we feature in the Real Yellowstone. But also at the same time, we've got to put a better outward image about what we are as conservationists through hunting. You know, not all hunting's conservation, but again, conservation. Gifford Pinchot defined that. It's a modern construct, the wise use of a natural resource. That's all it is, folks. It's not a state of mind. It's not an emotion. It's a physical act. You must conserve to be a conservationist. So, you know, at the end of the day, what we saw is that there are a lot of small countries. I'm talking third world countries like Mali and Burkina Faso and things like that that all get a vote at CITES. All 185 parties do. And, of course, the EU votes sometimes as a block of 27, sometimes individually, depending on what the situation is. But at the end of the day, I've actually heard and have video of some of these delegates from these governments that are thanking the Born Free Foundation, you know, the United States or the Humane Society of the United States for paying for these government delegates to attend the conference, to pay their transportation, their hotels, their meals, and what else are they paying for? Sounds pretty fishy to me. Sounds like graft, sounds like fraud, sounds like certainly pay to play. And then when I'm watching what's going on during election, you know, during these votes that are going on, I'm seeing the lobbyists from Humane Society walking behind the cordoned off area where NGOs aren't allowed, speaking directly with these delegates.
Well, and the Humane Society of the U.S., very different from your local animal shelter.
100%. Yep.
And our ag folks get it, and they always try to stress that. You've got the HSUS, which is very anti-agriculture, very anti, you know, rancher, anti-production agriculture, anti-hunting, et cetera. And so that's what you're seeing on the big picture, too. We see where free speech is under attack all over the world right now. Europe, it seems, lost. Like, there are no free speech rights, even in what used to be known as the Great Britain. Not so great right now, especially when it comes to free speech. And so we're seeing where this global movement against freedoms and free speech, where you see how that then puts pressure on the United States of America and props up groups in America to undermine our free speech here. Same thing from a hunting standpoint. They want to use other entities to put pressure on all countries and especially the United States of America to eventually do away with more and more forms of hunting. And so that's why they will try to leverage organizations like this.
Yeah, you know, and it's really simple as this. We've worked in Scotland, we've worked in Africa, we've worked all over the world making these films. And, of course, it's the same thing. Rural people, if they see a benefit, they take care of the resource. And, you know, we have thousands of years in human history where we pretty well haven't done a good job of taking things. Even our ancestors here on this continent, when we colonized it, moved across the landscape, we pretty well didn't realize that, hey, we needed to take care of these things. Now, wiser voices came about in the late 1800s. You got the Boone and Crockett Club with Teddy Roosevelt, George Bird Grinnell, again, Gifford Pinchot, other people like that. And that's why you have birds in the bird feeder, deer and the turkey in the backyard. It's why you have your national forest. It's because people who actually went hunting. So what we're seeing, you know, we did this film in Scotland. It came out last year. It's on Amazon now. It's called The Last Keeper. And I mean, it's this terrible war going over land use and land ownership. And unfortunately, the keepers, which are doing the management, the conservation work on the land to benefit the wildlife, of course, they're going to utilize it, right? They're going to shoot it. They're going to stalk it, all that stuff. They're being ostracized in their own communities. And, you know, it's that whole urban versus rural divide where you've got people that just don't understand what's going on. But here's the real culprit here. You talk about these international NGOs, the Humane Society of the United States, Born Free, all these other folks, the Center for Biological Diversity. Don't we see them in the headlines all the time? They're not a conservation group. None of these groups are, guys. They're preservationists.
They're radical environmental groups that are coming in here, filing lawsuits, taking advantage of, this is my perspective here, of course, taking advantage of left-wing judges in Montana to push their radical agenda, which is anti-hunting, which is anti-conservation, which is anti, I mean, they're basically trying to kick the people off the land here in Montana and throw our economy out.
But it's even more simpler than that. I've come to understand, Aaron, that you cannot have a nonprofit or a charity because you have to be able to raise money. If you can't raise money, you don't exist, all right? You must have a crisis. If you don't have a crisis, you can't raise money. You go to the donor and say, the world's coming to an end, give me $1 million. Great. They give you $1 million. The next year, you go back to the same donor and say, I need $1 million too. Oh, why do you need $1 million too? Well, because we've hired a bunch of people, cost of, you know, insurance is up, whatever.
Hold that thought. More to follow with Tom Opry right after this.
Broadcasting live across the big sky, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, if you are a horrible Christmas shopper, gift buyer, etc., like me, well, we're going to make it real easy for you here because Tom Opry's book, The Real Yellowstone, is now out and now available. We'll tell you about that here in just a second. Tom, though, again, let's go big picture worldwide. You were talking about these groups that, and that's one of my pet peeves too, whenever I see the media in Montana call these extremist groups that are constantly filing these lawsuits, whether it's, you know, wolves, whether it's grizzlies to keep them on the endangered species list, whether it's shutting down a timber project or going or shutting down grazing on federal lands, they're not conservationists. These are, in my view, extreme environmental groups who simply don't want us here. They want us kicked off the land, and they will use every tool in their disposal in order to make that happen. And you hit on something really big here, which is, look, they are businesses. They rely on making money. They rely on creating the appearance of a crisis to generate cash for their organizations. When it comes to these lawsuits that they file, that is a fundraising venture for them as well, because these liberal judges will rule on their behalf and then hand them a pile of cash in attorney's fees after they've done so as well.
Yeah, I mean, you've got the equal justice law that we have out there, and you know, that is the fundraising apparatus for a lot of these organizations. I mean, let's face it, folks, there are some little – it's a cottage industry, right, especially here in Montana when it comes to timber harvest. Again, wise use of a natural resource. We see what's going on with our national forests here. We haven't done a really good job of taking care of them, right? And, of course, beetle kill all over millions of – I mean, drive north of Helena, go up to Lincoln, and try to find 40 acres of mature forest that's alive. Not much. And unfortunately, because you have these organizations that are using crises to raise money, again, they don't care about the wildlife. They don't care about the rural communities that have to live with wildfire or human-wildlife conflict. You know, here, where we're sitting right now in the Flathead, there is more conflict here in this county, in this valley, than all the other counties combined in the state of Montana. I've got grizzly bears walking through my yard. I live 8 minutes from the International Airport. I've got mountain lions coming through. I got kids walking around. I got young kids. I got bird dogs. I mean, it's only a matter of time before something happens. And again, as a society, back on that, we've got to kind of figure out what we're willing to live with, not. But these anti-use groups, these preservationist groups, they got to make money. You got this self-perpetrating deal. You know, you move the crossbars every year because you got to have another crisis. And it doesn't even matter if we're talking about Montana or we're talking about other parts of the United States or what I dealt with in Scotland, where you have these groups like the John Muir Trust. Sounds really good, right? You know, and I literally sat down with their CEO, and of course we include all these different voices in my projects, very much opposing viewpoints. And at the end of the day, you know, I'm trying to seek out truth, not create propaganda. I want to leave the planet better than we found it. And I get fellas like this saying, well, you know, we want to see these international billionaires come up and buy up all this land because they can build the tourism infrastructure, you know, the asphalt parking lots and the lodges and stuff. And I'm like, what are you the CEO of? What? John Muir Trust. I said, do you ever read any of John Muir's writings? Oh, yeah, we don't believe in his ideology. It's just fraud.
Wow.
That is the issue with all these groups.
It's the replacement theory. They want to use these tools to kick us off the land so they can replace us with somebody else. And oftentimes it's their elitist buddies back in San Francisco or Seattle or wherever else, right?
Well, and that's throwing this back to the real Yellowstone. I mean, let's face it, folks. We're seeing major, major changes here in Montana. We're seeing people come in here that have made their money somewhere else, and I don't begrudge any of that. I mean, let's face it, we all want to make a decent living, be able to afford what we can, but we got people coming in and spending money on land that it will never, ever, that land will never, ever pay for itself with the kind of prices people. I mean, I even heard a rumor that there was a almost $200,000 or 200,000 acre ranch that was going to sell for close to $30,000 an acre. I mean, guys, that's almost $1 billion. I mean, you can put cows on it. They'd have to pop out golden eggs and maybe platinum ones to go with it. But again, these people are coming in here because they like our lifestyle. They like being here. They like seeing the mountains. They like seeing the elk. And of course, when they come in here, they may hunt. They may think that, you know, realize that conservation.
Yeah, because there's a lot of good people that have moved in, especially in the last few years as well, that are like-minded folks that share the same values. But you're right. It's driven up property values. In fact, I've got an email that I'm ready to send here in just a second to Art Laffer. I've known about Art Laffer since I was a kid when I read Rush Limbaugh's book, See, I Told You So, back in the 1990s, because he talked about the Laffer curve and Reagan's economic policies and more. But Art Laffer is proposing really dramatic changes to property taxes and effectively trying to end this property tax scam. He's working on it in Florida, so I want to get him on the show to talk about it from a Montana standpoint. But I digress. Because, you know, property values is what's driving up property taxes and driving up, you know, heart rates all across Montana as well.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it. I mean, we got a two-year appraisal system. Every 2 years, the government reappraises. And, of course, I've been involved in real estate most of my life, kind of a side deal. But, you know, appraisals are like rear ends. Everybody has one, folks. And they are all not the same. Especially after a spell of time with these multi-generational ranch and families, you know, that what's the cost basis? You know, you end up paying your taxes when you sell something based on, you know, whatever your cost basis is. You take that off the top, and whatever's left over, you pay your taxes on, you know. And so at the end of the day, we've got people that have been living on the land here in Montana, whether they're living on a large acreage or they're living on Flathead Lake or even just living in, you know, someplace closer outside of town where we've seen property value, especially here in the Flathead, 600-800% increase in the last 5 years. Again, it's supply and demand. We've had all these people migrate into Montana, and when I run into them at soccer games with my kids and things, you know, there's these new families there with kids and stuff, and it's not just older folks. It's a lot of younger people, and I'm like, so where'd you come from? And they're kind of looking at the ground. They go, California. Okay, so why did you move here? To get away from the COVID craziness.
Yeah.
Okay, so who are you voting for? Trump? Of course, you and I have talked about this. You know, here in Montana, we've seen a wholesale shift when it comes to politics. More people are voting center-right than center-left. And historically, we've been a state that kind of votes more center-left overall the last 100, 120 years. And so we've seen a big change here where we have...
We're just populist in general.
You know, historically, I mean, I was good friends with Dale Mallum down in Missoula. You know, the only Republican ever to get voted in the state Senate down there. But, you know, he owned the local hardware store. So everybody knew him, right?
Yeah.
And of course,
yeah,
we voted on person because we actually got a chance to know him. Because, I mean, I've only been here for close to 30 years. When I first got here, I don't know, there's 600,000 people living here, 650,000. Now we're, I don't know what we are, 1.1, 1.3, depending on who you talk to.
And that one political party is nothing today like it was even 10 years ago, let alone 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. And I just got back from Memphis, Tennessee. After I came back from Uzbekistan, I was with the Congressional Sportsman's Foundation, has their state legislator summit, which I think you were at the one in Bozeman a few years ago.
I think so, yeah.
Where Governor Gianforte.
And I've been to some of their events that coincided with SHOT Show and SCI well. So what came up at the Congressional Sportsman's
Day? You have 300-400 people at this event, and so now CSF has state caucuses, sportsman's caucuses, in all 50 states. That just has come about here in the last couple of years. But bad laws start at the local level. And so what I'm able to do with these films, we produce the feature-length film. We do a 55-minute version for PBS, which Wyoming PBS is going to be our presenting station. So all you guys that like Montana PBS, the whole realization is there is that they actually chased after me and recruited me in Wyoming. And so they're our presenting station. So that film will end up this next March
on
PBS.
So Wyoming PBS is going to play your film,
correct,
The Real Yellowstone.
Yep.
Is Montana PS?
They can do the same thing, because after we go to our presenting station, it actually goes into that American Public Television syndication.
And then anybody else can.
All 300 and some odd stations can pick it up and use it, which most of them will because we also supply them with the books. So it's a pretty cool deal. But we also do a 30-minute educational version, corporate boardroom, classroom settings, and political screenings. And we do a lot of political screenings. We actually screen that 30-minute version in Uzbekistan at CITES from people all over the world. It was fascinating. Australia, Lithuania, and doing Q&A as a filmmaker and hearing their perspectives is really fascinating.
Well, and this is important, too, because I think we're seeing a little bit of a breakthrough on forest fire, wildland firefighting policy, where you're seeing, like, you know, newly elected Senator Tim Sheehy working with Democrats to bring about some bipartisan forestry reform efforts. And so, but that's because who's been getting hardest hit by forest fires here lately? The folks on the far left coast. So it's such a big problem in their own backyard that they can't ignore it anymore. And they've realized they've got to do something about it. But from the sportsman's issues, the outdoor community, I think what you're doing with the Real Yellowstone and all of your other efforts is you are reminding folks who, because there's a lot of these special interest groups right now that are trying to divide and conquer, you know, the hunting, fishing crowd, the outdoor community, because they're being used by these extreme environmental groups. Because they know that if they can divide you, if they can divide the outdoorsmen, that then eventually they can conquer you and eventually do away with hunting. And I think that's why there's so much division. But what you're reminding these folks is also the importance of agriculture, the importance of the farmers and ranchers and what they do to be the real stewards of the land, which is why they have better wildlife habitat on these farm and ranch lands, because they actually manage the land, and so often the feds have not managed the land.
Yeah, and that was what was so important about being there at the Congressional Sportsman's Foundation State Legislator Caucus. I've got 300 legislators, state legislators, bipartisan, from all over the country. Matter of fact, we had 6 or 7 Montana legislators there. One of the senators, Ellie last name.
Ellie Boltman.
Ellie was there. Seckinger was there from Bozeman. Had a great conversation with Josh. You had Dewey Logie from St. Regis.
Yep.
There.
Yep.
Super neat people. Great. I had an opportunity. Of course, once I didn't know any of these people, but of course we do the film, and of course it's a big deal. Like, we're one of the big nights for the entire conference. And then afterwards, these guys said, "Hey, we need to get to know you." And I said, "Yeah, we need to have a screening of this film in the state legislature," because Representative Albus, Eric Albus from Hinsdale, is in the film.
Big outfitter.
Yeah, he's a big outfitter, big rancher. He's got a couple of good cattle herds. And then, you know, they farm about 13,000 acres over there. And so at the end of the day, you know, he's telling me that about maybe 10 of the 150 legislators here in Montana are connected to ag, are farmers or ranchers. The rest of them don't have a clue. And that's why it's so important that people like our legislators, our decision makers, watch these films, because they will get that information about what these people are doing to be good stewards of the land, because it is real. Because at the end of the day, if you take care of the land takes care of you.
Have you ever watched the show Landman yet? You know, Taylor Sheridan created the show Yellowstone. Then you created the documentary, The Real Yellowstone. You've watched a little bit of Landman. All right, well, I love the show Landman. Anyway, we'll talk about that and more. Plus, we got a caller on the phone lines. We will start with Francis in Big Fork coming up right after this quick break here on the show. And speaking of St. Regis, huge story that just broke about St. Regis involving illegal aliens and drugs.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordlund.
Last week, a new pilot program was announced on regenerative agricultural practices and, in turn, growing more nutritious food. That announcement was made by Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy and Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins.
The pilot brings USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service, or NRCS, back to its core mission, helping people help the land through whole farm, outcome-based voluntary conservation that our producers trust. Whole farm planning is the centerpiece, ensuring that all resource concerns, such as soil, water, and natural vitality, are addressed together, not one piece at a time.
In fiscal year 26, the regenerative pilot program will focus on whole farm planning that addresses every major resource concern, soil, water, and natural vitality under a single conservation framework.
Producers will benefit from a single application, reducing red tape and making conservation easier to access and our programs more impactful. Each producer's results will be measured and credited back to the farmer through an outcomes report, recognizing and rewarding improvements they achieve on their own land.
USDA is dedicating $400 million through the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, or EQIP, and $300 million through the Conservation Stewardship Program to fund the first year of regenerative agriculture projects. I'm Lane Nordlund.
You're listening to Montana Talks, bringing truth and freedom to Montana. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
All right, we're taking your phone calls here as we've got Tom Opry, a flathead filmmaker, conservationist, outdoorsman. Tom, real quick here, because I got to mention this St. Regis news and get to a caller here. But so your wife is one of the Dianas, one of Safari Club International. There's only like a handful of women who have done all of these things in the hunting arena to qualify for this legendary title, worldwide title. And then you're a part of another kind of legendary order as well, right?
Well, yeah, I'm a member of the International Order of St. Hubertus, which is a pretty cool thing. It's about 600 people from around the world that all believe in hunting and conservation and making sure that, you know, wildlife provide a value to rural communities all over the world. Again, like we've talked about in the beginning, you know, wildlife exists. I mean, conservation being the wise use of natural resource. Remember, folks, that Mother Nature doesn't practice conservation. We do. People do. And so that's something a lot of people forget. They don't really understand that. And so, very blessed to be a part of that group, great group of people, and, does an awful lot of good.
Well, let me mention the St. Regis news here, because this is a big news story that just broke this morning. The Montana Highway Patrol sending out a press release. Highway Patrol troopers, they had a couple of their special units working alongside the United States Border Patrol, the Mineral County Sheriff's Office, and the Air National Guard Counter-Drug Aviation, seizing over 14 pounds of meth, nearly 14 pounds of cocaine, 4 grams of fentanyl powder, 118 grams of marijuana, and then get this, that same operation resulted in 41 deportation arrests. So here you go, illegal aliens connected to a massive drug operation bust in St. Regis, Montana. In total, 51 arrests were made during this operation. Additionally, 3 more deportation arrests and 14 pounds of meth busted in Billings, Montana during that same time period from December 7th through the 11th as well. So that's the big news out of St. Regis. I'm going to get that story on our Montana Talks website here after the show. Let's go to Francis in Big Fork on the phone lines. Francis, what's on your mind? Thanks for calling in.
Oh, well, your guest was great, and I'm for farmers and forest management instead of all this smoke, and that kills people's lungs and everything. And also, I noticed that Tester is trying to get his nose into our business again and wants to. Can you explain it better? How he is trying to, him and Rosna, are trying to mess up our voting and money raising.
Ooh, yeah, that's a big story. We'll have to talk a little bit more in depth about that one here another day. But, yeah, very briefly, and Francis, it was great to see at the Flathead County Republican Women yesterday. For those of you who heard me on the show yesterday, my nose was completely blocked because I had nose surgery last week. I still had the splints in and all the packing following the surgery. At about 11:30, I went to Glacier ENT, Glacier Ear, Nose, and Throat, and Dr. Healy pulled the splints out, pulled the stuffing out, and I took this incredible breath of fresh air, and it was so awesome. And then I went straight to the Flathead County Republican Women and got to see Francis and the rest of the crew. But, basically, I think this actually ties in, Tom, with what we're talking about here, where we have got all these massive special interest groups from outside the state of Montana that are coming in and playing right here in our backyard to influence our elections, to influence ballot initiatives. And so basically now you've got the left trying to very sneakily, craftily manipulate our ballot initiatives and our campaign finance laws to silence certain voices while still being able to amplify their own. But, I mean, that's really what we're talking about here is global players from special interest groups coming in and trying to tell us what to do with our land.
We have this ballot initiative process here that, you know, obviously enacted in the 72 Constitution. And so, and a lot of other states have it. Now, if you're a sportsman and you say, wow, that's a right, we talked about hunting's not a right, right? It's a privilege. You know, the other 96% of the population grudgingly, in most cases, allows us to do it. But There's a thing called IP3 in Oregon. They've been trying to get on the ballot for the last few years. IP3, if it ends up on the ballot, again, you know, a ballot initiative is 50% plus one wins in a day. And if you get the signatures, it automatically goes on the November ballot. And then when you pass it, it becomes law. IP3 in Oregon would make it an automatic felony to harm an animal, wild or domestic. Now, we're talking Oregon, folks. We're talking Portland here. With the vet. It's just like King County in Seattle. It dictates all the policy, all the laws, and everything else that go on in the state of Oregon. Okay, these people are walking around on the sidewalks in front of grocery stores saying, sign here, and they're asking this question, do you believe in bestiality? That's honest to God what they're doing. And so, well, I don't sign here. You don't know what you're signing. But again, if you get enough signatures, it goes on the ballot. Now, here in Montana.
Although in Portland, I wonder how many people would actually say they, yeah, anyway, that's not
well,
topic
I mean, but yeah, but here at the end of the day, here in Montana, I mean, no, we have one of the, we have the highest per capita of our population that buys a hunting license. We're sitting around, I think, 17, 18%. Now, 10, 15 years ago, it was almost a quarter. So we're losing hunters here in Montana. But guys, you know, even if it's 20 or 25%, that means that we're 20, 25, maybe 30% behind before we even get to the ballot box. And like I said, the majority of the people that live in Montana is no longer a rural state. It's an urban state.
Well, to your point, when you look at the dwindling numbers of the population that goes hunting, now, part of me thinks, oh, good, more opportunities for the rest of us. It's like, okay, fewer hunters out there hunting, but that's not really the case, especially when you got a lot of out-of-state hunters flooding in this state, which is a common complaint as well. But here's the problem, is that the fewer it's just like with agriculture. The fewer people that are in agriculture now means fewer people standing up for agriculture now. So that means when you need people to come to bat for you, when you're in farm and ranch country, well, you've got fewer people coming to bat for you, right? Just look at the media landscape. How many people sit up here in the media and prop up the American Prairie Reserve every single stinking day and give them just puff piece news articles every day and never ask tough questions?
We do ask very tough questions.
You ask great questions.
And by the way, you can listen to those interviews with Pete Geddes, their vice president of external affairs, with their science guys, Garrett Buds and Scott Heidebrink, who does all their bison management, and then Bill Hilf, their chairman of the board. I was able to get a chance to. Interesting cat.
And you were very fair. You were very fair with everybody. But that's why, because you were fair, because you put a balanced report together, you're actually getting something that actually raises tough questions of these groups. Stuff that never makes it into the rest of the media is now going to make it into even public media down in Wyoming because you put together this balanced report. But one of the tough questions you really brought to the light, Dave Skinner here in the Flathead Valley, an incredible correspondent for Range Magazine who has documented APR. He's gone out, just like you have, to these ranchers and talked with them. You raised the question in the Real Yellowstone about the fact that, you know, hey, you basically called them out for going out to some of these ranches and buying out these ranches. And even though they were specifically asked, are you with the APR, because we do not want to sell to the APR, they were hiding behind other LLCs and everything. And they were very evasive with you on that
one. Well, and I can tell you, somebody's not telling me the truth. So, folks, you'll have to watch the film or read the book to understand what we're talking about here. There's something fishy going on. And, again, my purpose of being balanced, again, I'm not looking to create propaganda. I want to find the truth. And that's one of the things that what my films do, especially The Real Yellowstone. Here in Montana, we're independent folk, right? We don't like to be told what to do. And, of course, we certainly don't want the federal government telling us what to do. I get that. But at the end of the day, what my books and what my films do is it forces you to sit down and listen. Listen. Watch, see with your own two eyes what's going on. Because that's what I do. I tell people, just use your eyes. See what's going on here. And at the end of the day, I want you to make a decision based on the best information I can give you as the viewer, as the reader. And that's journalism 101, you know, and that's the way I was taught. That's how I was raised. And at the end of the day, we're really good here in Montana about sitting down and talking. That's the one thing we do pretty dang good. And when we get into these scenarios, is there a solution to what American Prairie is doing? Is there a solution for multi-generational ranchers? Yes, there is, folks. There's a way that we can make all this work. And, again, we're all about private property. I know I am. I you know it's tough to tell somebody that, you know, I had this discussion with these Montana legislators at that NASCOM in Memphis this last week, the conference, that, hey, so what about private property rights? I mean, you know, that's important. Well, we start telling NGOs and nonprofits they can't buy land. That means, you know, the Elk Foundation, certain veterans groups, and they can't do that. And so you don't get that law of unintended consequences. So I think at the end of the day, we're way better off sitting down and trying to find things. Now, is American Prairie great for the communities? Possibly not. You know, obviously when you remove people off the ranch, but it's not only them, it's these trophy ranches, right? These people coming in because they're not managing the land the same way that that family was making a living.
Well, as we've talked before, too, I mean, okay, you got a ranch kid in Lewistown, Montana, or a kid that wants to be a ranch kid in Lewistown, Montana. You want to expand the family ranch so both boys can have a ranch to run? How do you do it? Where do you get the land? You got the APR jacking up the price over here. You got out-of-state trophy hunter back, you know, jacking up the price over there. You're stuck in the middle with, you know, no chunk of land to be able to you know, raise your family on now, if that's the life you want, which so many people do want. All right, his book, The Real Yellowstone, a glowing review from none other than Ted Nugent, The Real Yellowstone by Tom Oprey. If you've seen the documentary or if you haven't, the book is now available. Sounds like an easy Christmas gift. We'll tell you how you can find it, get it for yourself or your friends this Christmas right after this quick break here with Montana Talks.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, Tom Oprey, what do you think? You know, speaking of out-of-state hunters, I was telling Tom, what do you think of this American flag that I've got right behind me here in the studio?
Oh, made first colored shotgun shells, yep. Red, white, and blue.
Yeah, red, white, and blue cool. Shotgun shells. So it was a great guy in Malta, Montana, who brought that to me as a gift when I was in Malta doing the show, and I got to meet
You need a gift to go to Malta, by the way, guys. It's a long ways from here.
Oh, but man, I love it, though. Oh, I love it out there. So many great folks. In fact, I was just chatting with Rye Tharp from KMMR yesterday after the program. But The Real Yellowstone, The Real Yellowstone, Framing the Future, the book is now out. What's the best way for people to get this in their hands or ship it off to friends?
The only way you can do it is go to shepherdsofwildlife.org. That's our website. It's on there. And every one of them includes a signature from me, and I'll sign it, personalize it to every buyer. That's just what we do with these things. It's a way that we raise funds and awareness for our mission, which is reconnecting our modern, urbanized society with nature. You know, really what folks, what we want them to understand is what good land stewardship is and what good wildlife and habitat conservation is. And really, at the end of the day, conservation, the wise use of a natural resource. Mother Nature doesn't practice conservation. We do. And so that's the importance of all this.
Speaking of The Real Yellowstone, you know, you travel all across Montana. One of my favorites is kind of like a good time of the year to do a year in review. When you showed up in Lewistown and you called into our show the Friday before your Lewistown event, I think you booked the theater for 200 people.
Yeah.
And you packed that place, and then you had to get another room for another 100 people because you couldn't fit everybody into that room. You were just recently at White Sulphur Springs.
Yeah, so we did it.
What's the newest stuff you've been hearing?
Well, we screened the film in 36 different cities, including a couple in Scotland. We had a project over there in September, and because we did the Scotland film, the theaters over there, we did a similar thing. We did 20-some cities in the U.K. with The Last Keeper, which is available on Amazon now. But at the end of the day, we're doing this in order to build up that grassroots momentum, that energy, you know. And so, you know, farmers and ranchers, obviously this film has really struck a chord with them. This is an opportunity. I mean, I'll tell you what, in Circle, Montana, you know, population 25, right? You know, it's not much. And they begged and begged, and I happened to be doing a screening over in Billings. And so I said, well, yeah, sure, I'll go. I'll come over and do this. And if you guys can get me 50 folks to show up. And they end up getting like 75 people, which I know there's not that many people living in Circle. But if you're sitting outside when all those ranchers and farmers come out the door, if I'm standing out front, my hand is sore. Everybody appreciates, and they say the same thing. Thank you for giving us a voice.
And the only people that I think they still appreciate it, but I know there's some people out there that wishes this was more of a battle axe of a film, you know, that just goes and kicks the other side in the teeth and fights back.
But that's propaganda, and what are you going to accomplish? All you're going to do is continue. Silo politics doesn't work in conservation, folks. We all have to figure out how we're going to have these positive outcomes, and we all have to sit and talk. And that's what these films do. That's what the books do. And if you think you're going to hit this from one end to the other, I'm sorry. You're not. You're going
to
fail.
Well, I think you need to hit it from every angle. I think we need incredible folks like you that are getting out, telling this story, and getting it into places like public media and things like that. But then I also think we need, you know, we need an aggressive strategy. We need folks to go out there and kick these radical environmental groups right in the teeth, you know, figuratively to speak as well, because that's what they're doing, coming in here every single day to us. And look, we're being invaded, and it's time to fight back, and our people get that. What was the other thing I wanted to talk about? Oh, another random wildlife story for you here. Yellowstone National Park, the Lamar Valley. The rangeland has been destroyed. Way too many bison inside Yellowstone National Park.
What do you mean? You mean the wolves didn't manage it?
Yeah. And so, but yet, you've got all these wolves, and so they pushed a lot. So the bison and the wolves combined have pushed all of the wildlife out of the park. Elk hunters wish there were more elk, right? But they've destroyed the rangeland of the Lamar Valley in Yellowstone National Park. But I saw a story in the Bozeman Chronicle the other day. Oh, the aspen trees are flourishing. Oh, Lottie freaking da. And all I could think of was Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah, but Aaron, you got to do a little more research on it. There's actually a report that came out, a scientific report, that pretty well says it's all bunk.
Yeah.
Because you move one herbivore out, the elk, okay, because, they killed everything. I mean, let's face it, folks. When they put those wolves in there, the gray wolves, I mean, it was like putting a bunch of kids down at Norm's News at 5 o'clock and closing the door with no adult supervision. They killed everything. I know a rancher, outfitter, Bill Hoppy down there in Gardner, that told me that about, I think it was 2000, 2001, you know, 5-6 years after those wolves got established down there, he found 41 dead elk calves in a calving ground up high, and every one of them, none of them had been eaten. You know, it's hunting university for the mothers. There's so much resource that after, again, Mother Nature doesn't practice conservation. Mm-hmm. We do.
Yeah.
And so that's what you see going on there. And so now you're talking about all these elk. I know ranchers that see them all up there, Red Lodge and up there in Rolling Hills. Why? Because they can see the predators coming.
But you're exactly right. This whole fake narrative got debunked, but yet it doesn't get propped up in so many of the media sources out there. When in the reality, like the Lamar Valley, the real story there is the tragedy of the wolves, the tragedy of too many bison, and the tragedy of these people who pretend to care more about wildlife and the environment when they're destroying both.
Well, the tragedy is that we're not managing the national park specifically for the wildlife. You have to manage entire ecosystems, folks. You can't just manage the elk or the deer or a mountain lion or two here. You have to do whole ecosystem management. And today, we're insisting that our wildlife managers manage this landscape and reconcile the checkbook every month, yet they can't have data from Tuesdays and Thursdays of every week. Well, you tell me how you're going to reconcile the checkbook. You can't, and that is the problem we have today.
I love it. You know, when you showed up here an hour ago, you're like, what are we going to talk about? I'm like, I don't know. We'll talk about your book. We'll talk about this. We'll talk about it. We could still probably go for another hour if we had more time. So, Tom, I greatly appreciate your time. Tom Opry, The Real Yellowstone. Tell folks again where they can find the book and the next documentary screening.
Yes, shepherdsofwildlife.org. You can get the book there on our website. We are shipping out all this week, so I'm not sure how the Postal Service will do, but we definitely will get it out. And we also have the EPUB available on our website, too.
Awesome. Great to see you. Thanks so much for your time.